Central Time. I'm Rob Farage. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, when it's hot out and you want to chill in the backyard, it's hard to beat a nice tall summer drink. We'll share some recipes for cocktails, mocktails, and more coming up on Food Friday. First, in the midst of good news in the U.S. when it comes to COVID-19, a new variant is raising some concern, especially for people who are unvaccinated. The Delta variant appears to be more contagious, and there are some signs it may be more dangerous for people who contract it. The variant is transmissible enough that children apparently are at a higher risk of getting ill than with previous variants of the virus. The Delta variant has been a big problem in places like India and the UK. It's been growing as a share of infections here in the U.S. A few dozen cases have been reported so far in Wisconsin. We're talking now about the Delta variant of the coronavirus, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about this Delta variant or other variants of the virus that causes COVID-19 and what it means for how the disease spreads, how it affects people? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Amanda Simonek is an associate professor of epidemiology at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee Zilber School of Public Health and an associate editor at Dear Pandemic, a website and social media campaign where you can find information on COVID-19. Amanda, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me back on the show today.
When did this Delta variant of the virus that causes COVID-19 first start showing up on our radar, Amanda?
It was a couple weeks ago that it was declared a variant of concern. This means that this is a version of the virus. The original strain of the SARS-CoV-2 virus has some mutations that make it a concern because it could be more transmissible. It could cause more severe illness. It's essentially something that people are watching. And, we have the benefit of sort of observing what's happened in countries across the pond, the UK and in India. And what they've, been observing is that this strain, this variant of the virus is starting to become the dominant strain that is infecting people. So it's, somehow sort of taking over in terms of the distribution of the variants that have been transmitting in the population.
And it seems like here in the U.S., Amanda, that's been happening. It seems like as a percentage of total COVID cases, this Delta variant, it's not the majority yet, but it's jumping pretty quickly.
It's not. I think the latest estimates I've seen are around 20% of cases are people who have been infected with this variant strain. And within, Wisconsin, I think we still aren't seeing a large surge in cases. So there certainly is variability across the U.S., but U.S.-wide, about 20% of cases are being in this variant.
Let's talk about a couple different groups and what this might mean for them. First of all, people who are vaccinated, who are fully vaccinated now against COVID-19, does this Delta variant change the equation much for them?
Yeah, I think if you're fully vaccinated, that's the best case scenario, right? We're still seeing estimates of with both doses of, for instance, the Pfizer vaccine, that the efficacy or the vaccine effectiveness is still around 80%. And that, if you have both doses, the effectiveness against hospitalization is still around 94%. That's pretty good, right? This means that this vaccine is able to cause your body, your immune systems to still view this virus, this variant, as something foreign. Your antibodies that you've produced in response to this vaccine and other immune factors are responding to it. If you have only one dose or you've been on the fence about getting vaccinated, this is even more impetus to go ahead, make that appointment, get into a clinic, to a vaccine site and get your vaccine.
We're talking to Amanda Simonek from the UW-Milwaukee Zilber School of Public Health, associate professor there of epidemiology, looking at the latest COVID-19 news, especially concerns about this Delta variant of the disease, a faster spreading, it looks like. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Amanda, I want to talk about kids now. Dr. Anthony Fauci talked about how this Delta variant might affect kids, talking about that here on CBS this morning.
So it isn't that they are more susceptible, but this virus is a more transmissible virus.
Right.
Therefore, children will more likely get infected.
Kids under 12 still unvaccinated. They're not eligible to be vaccinated. Amanda, not necessarily more vulnerable, we're hearing there, to this disease, but because it spreads faster, that changes the odds a little bit. Can you talk about that a little more?
Yeah, so it's not just kids. It would be anyone who's not vaccinated right now, right? So this is, you know, something that if this variant gets introduced into a susceptible population, now we're seeing that it's maybe around 50 to 60% more transmissible. You know, so that means even where cases are low, this variant will have sort of the ability to spread in the population when introduced. And so, you know, I think what we can do is the same thing that we have been doing, especially for kids who don't have the option of getting vaccinated yet, is to, you know, keep up those same strategies that we have been using all along over the past 15 months, which is if you can do things outdoors, if you can maintain space, that's a better scenario than being in indoor, poorly ventilated spaces, you know, and if you do have to be indoors, you want to wear masks. The CDC, you know, still recommends that people who are not vaccinated wear face masks in indoor settings or in crowded outdoor settings. And so that recommendation hasn't changed. You know, this virus, we joke, it's not going to defy the laws of physics. Those same mitigation measures of keeping distance from people, wearing a mask, are going to work. It's just that we need to, you know, be vigilant about doing that. And what we want to avoid is right now, maybe that variant hasn't taken hold in Wisconsin, but that can change very quickly because of how transmissible it is. And so, you know, keeping our mind frame around, hey, not vaccinated, still need to be doing, you know, these mitigation strategies is what's going to help, along with more people getting vaccinated. You know, what we probably will observe is that in communities where vaccination rates are high and there are, you know, a fewer proportion of the population is susceptible, it's going to be harder for that variant to take hold and take off. But we know that, you know, across the state of Wisconsin, the proportion vaccinated overall is about 50% that have had both doses. But that varies a lot across counties and communities, right? And so, you know, we can approach this in two ways. Adults or those that are 12 and over that are eligible to get vaccinated can get vaccinated. You'll have good protection against getting infected and against severe illness. And it'll also reduce the number of people who are susceptible to the variant and build up that sort of firewall of protection for other people around you.
UW-Milwaukee epidemiologist Amanda Simonek is with us, looking at the latest COVID-19 news, including the spread of the Delta variant of the virus. Looks like it spreads faster, raising some worries as new vaccination rates slow down. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about this Delta variant or other variations on the coronavirus? Are you still worried about the disease? What are vaccination rates like in your own community? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with UW-Milwaukee epidemiologist Amanda Simonek about the Delta variant of the coronavirus that causes COVID-19. And you could join in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. Do you have worries about our vaccination rate lately? Questions about the latest news on COVID-19? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. 1-2-3-4. Amanda, I want to ask about a possible problem scenario here as we get to the fall and we start doing things indoors again. We know vaccine rates, they're not equal everywhere. There are pockets of unvaccinated people. Are we worried that, when we get to that situation, we've got this Delta variant maybe on the rise, we could see these really localized outbreaks of the disease?
I do think that there's going to be a lot of variation locally, right? Because different communities will have different vaccination rates. Where you have high vaccination rates, there's going to be sort of that firewall of protection, right? For those that cannot be vaccinated or those that even if they're vaccinated are maybe not building up as good of immune response. So somebody who's immune compromised, right, may not be able to bolster the immune response to the vaccines that someone who isn't, does. And so, I think what we worry about with more transmissible variants or, variants that might cause more severe illness is that even if you start off with low case rates, if your vaccination rates aren't high, there's a lot of people who are potentially susceptible to this infection and it can spread faster because of that increase in transmissibility. I don't have my magic eight ball with me today, but I think we'll have to see where we're at come fall. And, where I hope we're at is that people have been encouraged to get vaccinated. Those 12 and over have done that, and that the most people possible in our communities are protected against the vaccine. I think in terms of what we're looking for in terms going back to indoor environments, we'll have to see what the case burden is in the community, what the circulation is of this variant, and what the vaccination rates are to determine whether, it's still going to be recommended that we wear masks indoors and in other environments. So I can't predict the future, but I can tell everybody that the best options for heading off another surge in cases, whether it's locally or statewide, is to get vaccinated. And if you aren't eligible yet, to just maintain those things that we know work, right?
Let's bring out a caller now at 800-642-1234. Glenn is with us in Milwaukee. Glenn, hello.
Hi. My question is, I've received both doses of the vaccine, and I also have an immune system that's kind of compromised. So I received a spike test, and the results of that was non-reactive. So I'm just wondering, at what point am I right now, and what do I do about this?
Glenn, I'm sorry to hear that, and best to you. Amanda, immune compromised, we've heard about this, we've talked about this on the show some. Some people, because their immune systems are compromised for a wide variety of reasons, they get that vaccine and it's not producing those antibodies. So what advice do you have for Glenn?
Well, I mean, what I would say is to talk to your doctor, to get their advice about your personal condition. You want to make sure that the antibody test that you took is going to detect the antibodies against the vaccine in particular and not the virus. And you want to also, keep in mind that there may be some advice around getting a booster vaccine or something that comes along the line here in the next few, weeks or months, because it is on the radar of, medical professionals and scientists that we have to figure out a way, to protect those people who are immune compromised. And if you're feeling nervous about it, you can continue to wear a mask in public and to social distance or try to hang out with people outdoors. But the best, advice I can say is to consult with your own medical professional about your particular condition.
Glenn, good luck to you. We'll go to Francesca now in Elkhorn. Francesca, hi.
Hi, I wanted to hear what your guests had to speak on the Delta Plus variant that's coming out. I guess that's the B1612.2. I guess it's not only more transmissible, but it also is breaking through the vaccination, both of people who've had the illness and who've had vaccination.
Francesca, thanks for the call. Amanda, the variant on the variant, this Delta Plus, I haven't seen too much about that. What do we know?
Yeah, you know, I think we're still learning. We're still watching to see, you know, across the board, we're monitoring if breakthrough cases are happening. You know, I don't feel like we're at the point where we feel like there's been a complete escape variant where the vaccines are offering no protection against the variants of SARS-CoV that are CoV-2 that are circulating. So I would say we're watching it. You know, we're trying to learn about what the particular mutations on the, you know, spike protein and other parts of the virus and what they actually mean for transmissibility or for evasion of, you know, neutralization by antibodies. So we're still learning.
Thanks a lot for that call. In our last minute or so, Amanda, a lot of tension still on getting vaccines to people. What would be your priority now to make sure people have access to vaccines and they're able to get them conveniently?
I mean, I, you know, personally feel like I have a desire for those that are working in the service industry, for those that are essential workers in grocery stores, to have a, you know, opportunity to protect themselves. You know, if we're going to be out re-socializing in the community and things like that, those are the folks that I hope feel like they can, you know, have their answers, their questions answered. Please, you know, go to our website, dearpandemic.org. We have been answering vaccine related questions now since, you know, last November. If you have that question, we've probably answered it and you can search there. So, you know, I would say, it's okay to have questions about these vaccines. It's okay to want to gather information. And I hope you reach out to a trusted information source, a trusted, you know, medical professional in your life, or other trusted person. Get the information you need and get out there and, you know, get to a clinic and get your vaccine.
Amanda, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thanks for having me.
Amanda Simonek is an associate professor of epidemiology at the University of Wisconsin Milwaukee Zilber School of Public Health and an associate editor of what she just mentioned there, Dear Pandemic. It's a website and social media campaign where you can find information on COVID-19, answers to lots of questions about vaccines and much more. She joined us today for an update on COVID-19 and the Delta variant of the virus. Next month marks 5 years since severe storms caused widespread flooding and millions of dollars in damage across northern Wisconsin. Saxon Harbor in Iron County was among areas hardest hit. Local, state, and federal leaders recently marked efforts to restore the harbor. And as Danielle Kading reports, they hope changes will prevent damage as the region sees more frequent, intense storms.
The Oronto Creek is hardly more than a trickle now as it bends along Saxon Harbor toward Lake Superior. But 5 years ago, the gentle stream resembled a raging river that scoured its marina and campground. Grace Hines and her husband Bill watched from the windows of their bar as floodwater sent trees and boats and debris surging into the lake. Hines struggled to face the destruction the next morning.
And I came out of the bar and I got onto the deck and saw that stuff piled up all over and how the ditches were even full of brush and stuff like this. And I thought, I can't do this. I can't do it. I'm going to be ill.
Speaking before a crowd at the harbor's grand opening, she says the disaster would have been bearable if not for the loss of her friend Mitch Kosky to the flood.
I swear, you could hear hearts break and tears fall.
Kosky was a lifelong friend to Iron County Board Chair Joe Pinardi. The two served together both on the county board and as volunteer firefighters.
He was crossing the bridge right here to come to rescue people in the campground, and the current took his 3/4-ton Ford truck, instantly washed it down into that corner up there, and he never got out of it.
The storm not only claimed Kosky's life, it left behind a scene of destruction that took just under $15 million to repair. Scientists have found global warming is increasing the frequency and intensity of rains that raise the risk of flooding that can lead to deaths and extensive damage. In the last decade, northern Wisconsin has witnessed 3 floods that are only supposed to occur once every 500 to 1,000 years. Speaking at the harbor, Governor Tony Evers says that's why he's proposed investing $30 million in the next two-year budget to make roads and infrastructure more resilient to climate change.
Now, these floods are clearly devastating to our families, our businesses, and to our homeowners. But this is a big job that not any one of us can do alone.
U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin has been pushing for legislation that will allow communities to build more resilient infrastructure. She told the crowd that Iron County struggled to make changes to the harbor with federal relief funds.
Most federal programs say, well, you can't make these big improvements to become more resilient or stronger. You can only use federal tax dollars to build it back to exactly the way it was.
President Joe Biden recently announced $1 billion to help communities, states, and tribes prepare for extreme weather and other disasters. Republican Congressman Tom Tiffany helped direct funding to Saxon Harbor for repairs, but he wouldn't say whether he would support federal proposals to increase resilience to climate change.
The flood that happened in 2016 is not the first time that that happened up here. Each time, it's being built back differently. And that's what's important, is just to continually make improvement.
In other parts of northern Wisconsin, those changes include highways that have been reconstructed with larger culverts and bridges to handle future floodwaters. At Saxon Harbor, Iron County Forest Administrator Eric Peterson says they put in a bigger bridge and installed a concrete spillway at the harbor to control the flow of rushing water.
When the rains and the river waters come up, they work. Will they handle a 1,000-year flood event like we had in 2016? Who knows? Maybe, maybe not.
Peterson says it's not cost-effective to prepare for floods that happen once in a lifetime, but he says they've done the best they can to make the marina and campground more resilient. For Grace Hines, she's happy to see the Lake Superior Harbor restored.
Seeing how the people that are coming back are just, particularly the outsiders that are coming back and are so amazed at how nice it is again.
Hines says it's up to everyone to keep it that way for years to come. Danielle Kading, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up after the news, it's this week's edition of Food Friday. We'll find out how to make some tasty and refreshing summer drinks. We've got some cocktails and mocktails in the works. You can get us started right now. Let us know your favorite summertime beverage on the Ideas Network Facebook page. That's the Ideas Network Facebook page. Or you can email ideas@WPR.org. If you want, get a start on some recipes over at WPR.org/Food Friday. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Listening to Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up Monday at 7 on The Morning Show, a state lawmaker joins the program for a look at a new package of police reform bills that passed the legislature with bipartisan support. That's Monday morning at 7 here on the Ideas Network. Now, when it's hot outside and you want to relax, maybe out in the backyard, you need a nice drink in your hand. Maybe something colorful, fruity, herby maybe, bubbly, possibly even frozen. Add a little umbrella or fruit garnish in there. It doesn't just look cool. It's a good way to beat the heat. And it doesn't have to be boozy. There are a lot of great mocktail options that taste just as good as signature cocktails. In this week's edition of Food Friday, we're going to talk about how to make a bunch of these drinks, and we want to hear what you like. Call 800-642-1234. What's your go-to summer beverage? Do you have a favorite drink? Maybe a cocktail, margarita, daiquiri, pina colada, shandy? What's the most impressive drink you've made for someone? Do you have a favorite non-alcoholic cocktail or a question about how to make good ones? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Sonia Overheiser is the co-author with her husband Alex of Pretty Simple Cooking, 100 delicious vegetarian recipes to make you fall in love with real food. They also run the website acouplecooks.com, where she writes and develops recipes, including beverage recipes. Sodia, welcome back to the show.
Rob, thanks so much for having me.
Well, I can be kind of streaky with a beverage. Like, it's the season and I'm trying something new and I just run with it. Do you have a favorite of the summer so far?
You know, what I love to do in the summer is pair everything with bubbles. So I take sparkling water, it's also called soda water or club soda, and mix that with just about anything. You can mix it with wine to make a spritzer. You can mix it with Saint-Germain. If you would like to get a little fancy, you can mix it with beer. You can mix it with anything, and it makes it a lovely hydrating cocktail, and it makes a little lower alcohol as well.
I went through a bunch of the beverages you have on your website, some alcoholic, some not. It seems like a guiding philosophy is most of them are pretty simple. You know, you can go into bar recipe books and get really complicated. It seems like your philosophy is simpler and fewer ingredients overall. Do I have that about right?
Absolutely. As you know, we wrote the book Pretty Simple Cooking, and I think we've now kind of started to hone in on pretty simple drinks. So yeah, how can you make the most of the liquors that you have on hand? Because it can get expensive, and we have experimented with all sorts of different liqueurs and liquors, and we know it can get pretty pricey. And so really trying to hone down the simplest ingredients. And you can make cocktails where you measure it all out and you're very precise and you use a cocktail shaker and a certain amount of ice and all that. Or you can just be a free form. And that's what I love about summer drinks is that you can really just take your favorite liqueur, add some sparkling water, and it's a really hydrating, tasty beverage.
Well, you've got a few recipes you shared with us. We've got them up at WPR.org/Food Friday. Let's meet one of them that meets a couple of criteria you just mentioned, the Rosé Spritzer. And you write on your website, this is a summer cocktail we 100% must try ASAP. Tell somebody Rosé Spritzer.
Sure. So it's really, really simple. It's just wine and soda water. That's either club soda or just your favorite sparkling water brand. You can even take your LaCroix out of the fridge and mix it with rosé wine. I love it with rosé because it's nice and crisp and tart. You can also do a red wine spritzer as well with red wine or a white wine spritzer. So really any wine that you have on hand. And then if you want to, you know, step it up a few notches, you can always make frozen rosé. You'll mix some rosé with strawberries and freeze that, then blend it up into kind of a slushy. So that's another favorite of ours.
We are talking about great summertime cocktails, and we'll get some mocktails too with Sonia Overheiser, co-author of Pretty Simple Cooking, 100 Delicious Vegetarian Recipes to Make You Fall in Love with Real Food. You can find a lot of her work on the website, acouplecooks.com, including a bunch of beverages. We've got a few at WPR.org/Food Friday. Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Emily is with us in Luxembourg. Emily, hi.
Hi.
What do you got for us, Emily?
My all-time favorite summer beverage, Brandy Swatch. I use my grandma's recipe. I have the same ice cream pail I use every year for it. I have a gallon sitting in my freezer right now. It is just so refreshing on a hot day.
This is a big Wisconsin treat. I know. What goes into your Brandy slush, Emily?
It's the pretty normal one. It has black tea and then a can of lemonade, a can of orange juice, as much brandy, 2 to 4 cups of brandy, depends on how I'm feeling, and then I finish it off with squirt. I know some people do sweet, like a lemon lime soda. I like the squirt.
Emily, thank you so much for sharing that, Sonia. A brandy slush there, and that's, I don't know if that's big elsewhere. We've got some unique things in Wisconsin, like the brandy old-fashioned sweet, the brandy slush, some other things like that. Is that one that's on your radar for the summertime?
You know, this is new to me, but I will say I've been reading up on Wisconsin cocktails and it's so much fun to learn about the Brandy Old Fashioned, Brandy Alexander, Grasshopper. I just tried the Pink Squirrel. Is that the right?
Yep, that's one.
Yep. 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 So I know there's a long tradition of cocktails in Wisconsin. So I'm excited to learn about this one. We're going to be trying that ASAP.
Yeah, I've heard from bartenders around the country that if somebody orders a brandy old fashioned, that you just know they're from Wisconsin.
Yes,
like there's no other
absolutely alternative
to that. Well, let's get into now non-alcoholic beverages. And I, if it isn't clear, I drink cocktails with alcohol myself. And there are times I want that cocktail experience, but I don't want the booze. But the tricky thing is a lot of times they're so, you know, it's like sugary and fruity. It's like drinking a juice box. How do we beat the juice box mocktail scenario?
Totally. Yeah. So we love to keep our mocktails as tart and crisp as we can. So yeah, you'll find a lot of different recipes on our website. Most of them, we try to really stay true to that cocktail experience. If we're replicating it as a virgin drink, for example, a virgin margarita, ours is very, very tart. And then we use a really fun yet weird substitute for the alcohol in our virgin margarita. We use pickle juice.
Yeah. I saw that on your website. It's why, how does pickle juice work? And there was another kind of like olive, not olive brine, but something else you use.
Caper brine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the deal with that? How does pickle juice make a mocktail taste boozy? I don't get it.
Right. So if you add just a hint of it, you're not going to add a lot, and I promise it will not taste like a pickle. but it really, it adds that kind of bitter edge that really helps to mimic alcohol. So you kind of feel like you're tasting some tequila, but no, it's just pickle juice. So you got to try it.
Some of my solutions there have been, I have bitters around sometimes, so I'll use that. Mm-hmm. And you could even get non-alcoholic bitters. You're only using a few drops, so I don't mind that. I'll do some really strong black iced tea as one of my mixers to get a little bitter element into things.
That's
as well.
That's a great
idea. Any
I
other?
Love that.
Well, let's check out one of your mocktails actually that you shared with us. You've got the cherry lime Ricky, which you could add booze to, but tell us about the boozeless version.
Right. So this one it's a little sweeter, but it's really balanced with that lime. So I love cherry and lime together in anything. And they really go hand in hand here. You use a little bit of a cocktail syrup and you pair that with lime juice and then sparkling water. It's so, so refreshing. And if you want to make it into a cocktail, so if you want to serve some cocktails and some mocktails, you can add gin to it. The Gin Ricky is a very old classic cocktail, but it's really turned kind of into a mocktail these days. So it's gotten very popular. You can make it either way. So add gin or just sip it straight up. It's super tart and crisp and bubbly, and I love it.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234 with Keith in Green Bay. Keith, hi.
Hi. I recently discovered something called a shrub.
What is a shrub? I don't know this one.
Yeah, a shrub is actually, it goes back to colonial times. And the recipe basically is very simple. It's 500 grams of fruit, 500 grams of sugar, and 500 mils of a vinegar. And the last one I made was strawberry. So it was mashed up strawberries and white sugar, and you let it macerate for a couple days, and then you squeeze all the juice out of it, and you put aside the solids. And then I added champagne vinegar to it.
Huh. And this doesn't, and you don't have to add booze at any state of the, any stage of the equation, right?
You don't have to add booze. Then you use it like a base with like, I like it with tonic water, or you could use any kind of a sparkling water. You could use like Sprite or 7-Up or whatever. And you probably could add booze. I would think gin or vodka, you know, or in Wisconsin brandy. But I've been thinking of experiment. I made one with rhubarb that I haven't tasted yet, with brown sugar and apple cider vinegar. And I have different things like peach ginger with, different sugars or vinegars. So I'm going to experiment with it this summer.
Yeah, this sounds like, thanks for that call, Keith. Sonia, this sounds like something where you can really play mad scientist and try any permutation of fruits and sugars and vinegars. Sounds fun.
Absolutely. I've had one at a restaurant, but I have never tried recreating it on my own at home. So I love that inspiration. Now I'm adding it to the list.
Excellent.
Along with that.
Keith, thank you for sharing that at 800-642-1234. We're talking about making great summertime drinks, alcoholic or not, with Sonia Overheiser, co-author of Pretty Simple Cooking, 100 Delicious Vegetarian Recipes to Make You Fall in Love with Real Food. Sonia set us up with a few drink recipes you could check out at wpr.org/foodfriday, a rosé spritzer, a summer shandy, and a cherry lime Ricky. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What is your favorite summer cocktail or mocktail? Do you have a spin of your own on one of the classics? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our Food Friday talk about summer drinks, including cocktails, mocktails, shandies, and more. Sonia Overheiser stays with us, co-author with her husband Alex of the book Pretty Simple Cooking. They run the website acouplecooks.com, where, among many other things, they have lots of beverages. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your favorite summertime drinks or your questions if you need some advice. 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go back to your calls now. Russ is with us in Pleasant Springs. Russ, hi.
Hi. My favorite year-round cocktail is an old-fashioned, which I understand is the state drink of Wisconsin. And you'd be surprised how many bartenders, whether they're local or at major restaurants, do not know how to make that drink. I've had them come back to the table at me in a brandy snifter with pieces of pineapple and an umbrella in it. I mean,
the pineapple first?
You know, I sent them back. You know, I said, I don't know what this is, but it's not an old fashioned. You would think that the state drink would be, you know, a little more understandable by trained bartenders.
Russ, thanks a lot for sharing that story. I love it. Pineapple in the old fashioned. Sonia, are there a lot of regional drinks like this that you've run across, whether in your neck of the woods or as you research your recipes?
There's less than you would think, and the brandy old fashioned really is exemplary when it comes to regional drinks. As I was researching that one, I found that it's garnished with all sorts of weird things like onions and Brussels sprouts. So it's been really fun to learn about regional drinks. But yeah, I would say more often than not, there's less regional drinks that I've come across that are popular on a national scale.
Thanks a lot for that call. Before we go back to our caller, Sonia, let's check out the third recipe you shared with us, a shandy recipe, your summer shandy. We've got that up at WPR.org/Food Friday. Walk us through that.
Sure. So you've probably bought a shandy at the store, but you may never have made it at home. A shandy is actually a British drink, and it was invented in the 1800s. It was originally called a shandy gaff, and it was made by mixing beer and ginger ale or ginger beer. And it's kind of evolved since then, but if you order it in the UK, you'll get it with a sparkling lemonade or a sparkling lemon lime soda. So that's similar to Sprite, but we prefer it with a sparkling lemonade. And our version actually makes it with a homemade sparkling lemonade. So all you need is your sparkling water, fresh lemon juice, and simple syrup. So if you mix those together and add it to beer, it is incredibly refreshing. For our summer shandy, we like making it with a craft wheat beer, and it tastes incredible in the summer.
It's Food Friday. We're getting some great summertime mixed drinks with Sonia Overheiser, co-author of the book Pretty Simple Cooking. Back to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Nicole is with us now in Madison. Nicole, hi.
Hi, guys. So I love a mojito, and I think they're super refreshing, especially in the summer. I drink them all year round, but I like to do one with strawberry puree and mango rum and citrus rum to make it a little more fruity.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. Is this a recipe you came up with yourself, Nicole, or did you find it somewhere and replicate it?
Actually, I found it when I was bartending, and I tweaked it so that it would be a little more fruity than the original.
Awesome. I love it, Nicole. Thanks so much. Sonia, we haven't really tapped into the world of really tropical type cocktails. What are some of your favorites along those lines?
I agree with Nicole. The mojito is where it's at for me in the summer. And this summer, we've been making some variations on a mojito, similar to the one she mentioned. You can muddle up strawberries, you can muddle up peaches, you can muddle raspberries. Do that in your cocktail shaker first, and then add the remaining ingredients, your rum, your simple syrup, and your mint, and it's so fruity and delicious. So mojito is definitely up there for me. And then who couldn't resist a classic pina colada, right, in the summer? You might be surprised of exactly what is in the classic pina colada. It uses some pineapple, and then it has a coconut syrup that you use, and an ice and rum, and that is incredibly refreshing. So I highly recommend trying the absolute classic pina colada.
Nicole, thanks a lot for sharing that with us. We'll go to Joel now in Ironwood, Michigan. Joel, hi.
Hi, hi. I hadn't heard anybody mention one of my favorite old fashions, Southern Comfort old fashions.
Oop, just cut out there, Joel. I heard Southern Comfort old fashioned. I think the next word was going to be sweet. And I have encountered that. A bartender I knew in town was a connoisseur of old fashions and went from supper club to supper club trying different ones. And that was one of his. I don't know. I think of Southern Comfort as kind of a thicker, more wintry thing. Sonia, how about you?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think I might need to come take a special visit to Wisconsin and just do a tour day old fashioned.
you could easily build a tour. Have somebody else drive for you, though.
There we go.
And check with your dentist first. It's a pretty sweet drink. We heard from Marcia on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Marcia says, I love a Moscow mule in the summer. Now, these have gotten really big. I feel like I see them everywhere, yeah. Sonia, with like a zillion permutations. Talk about there the Moscow mule a little, please.
There are a zillion permutations. So I love a good Moscow mule. It's vodka and ginger beer and lime. And there is pretty much one for every single alcohol. So you have a Mexican mule with tequila, a Kentucky mule with bourbon, a gin mule is a fun variation. That's kind of like a mashup between a mojito and a Moscow mule. So we have every single one of those over on our website, acoupleofcooks.com, if you want to go crazy with mules.
And thanks to Marcia for sending that along. Here's one, Sonia, I encountered at a bar and replicated. It sounded weird to me. It was like rye or bourbon. I can't remember at the bar. I think they called it a maple smash. So the bourbon, maple syrup, and lemon. And I thought, what are those things doing together? And it sounds like great. I'll order it. And it was really good. And I'm like, that's three ingredients that are readily obtainable in our culture. And I make them all the time. And they're awesome for the summer. Any thoughts on that or anything that you want to riff on with that?
Right. We love a whiskey smash. You can also make it with vodka and do a vodka smash. We have a version of it that's a berry vodka smash. So add some fresh berries to that, muddle them up, and then add the lemon juice and vodka and simple syrup. And it's delicious. That's a great suggestion.
All right. We've had a lot of inspiration ideas. Sonia, what's on your menu beverage-wise for this very weekend?
Oh, goodness. That's a great question. You know, we haven't talked about the Aperol Spritz, which is a really great summer drink. It's a classic Italian drink. And so probably some version of Spritz, possibly the Aperol Spritz.
That sounds awesome. Sonia, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
That's Sonia Overhiser, co-author with her husband Alex of Pretty Simple Cooking, 100 delicious vegetarian recipes to make you fall in love with real food. They're the pair behind acoupleofcooks.com. She joined us for this edition of Food Friday for a look at great mixed drinks for the summertime. Got a few recipes from Sonia over at WPR.org/Food Friday, a rosé spritzer, a summer shandy, and a mocktail, a cherry lime Ricky. And if you poke around at acoupleofcooks.com, you can find long lists of recipes for cocktails and mocktails as well. And you can still share your favorites, recipes if you'd like, over on the Ideas Network Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Coming up Monday here on Central Time, the never-ending story of federal infrastructure took a turn this week with the beginnings of a bipartisan agreement. But is it really going to happen? We'll track the latest twists and what it could mean for Wisconsin. Lead pipe removal has been a long-term project in the American water system. We'll find out how federal funds are helping the effort in Milwaukee and why there are still some obstacles. And we'll look back at the history of TV game shows, and you can call in with your favorites in the category of favorite game shows for 300. That's coming up Monday on Central Time. How many oceans are there on this here planet of ours? My usual answer would be 4. That's what I learned in school. Atlantic, Pacific, Indian, and Arctic oceans. That's a nice category for school learning. Just 4 items to memorize. I could do that. I could even handle 5 Great Lakes. But there are different answers to the question of how many oceans there are. At some point, my kids made the case that there's just 1 ocean, since they're all connected. But I stuck with 4. Until now. The National Geographic Society announced earlier this month, I just saw it, that they're adding a 5th ocean to their future maps and globes. The new ocean, well, it's not new exactly, the water's been there all along, it's the Southern Ocean, the body of water that surrounds Antarctica. According to National Geographic, the Southern Ocean has been recognized as a distinct body of water by more and more scientists. It's set off by a current, and it's cold. Right now, the water is treated as like the southern extremes of the Atlantic, the Pacific, and Indian Oceans. The case that they're making is the water around one part of Antarctica has a lot more in common with the rest of the Southern Ocean than it does, say, with the Atlantic. How are we going to remember all 5? I learned the Great Lakes as homes. Huron, Ontario, Michigan, Erie, Superior. So for oceans, Southern, Atlantic, Indian, Pacific, Arctic, Saipa, Paisa, IASAP, it's a work in progress. Sailing the 7 seas and the 5 oceans, this is Central Time.